Welcome back to Reflections. Your host, Jorge Gonzalez, and we're talking about the development of the good life. This book that I'm going to get to on lessons and the longest scientific study, and we'll discuss it. And just leading up to it, the importance of humility and based on the sermon and the gospel last week. And at the end of the first segment, I mentioned that I wanted to briefly just give so it took me a long time with two prizes that I received at Andover. I suffered to get in and suffered through the first year. I had in the parochial school where I was, Saranac Lake, grades in 97, 96, and all of a sudden I was getting zeros and 50s and 60s at Andover. And at the end of the second year, I received a prize called the Keys Prize, which completely surprised me. I was not expecting it. I still believe I didn't deserve it, but it was for the outstanding sophomore in scholarship and leadership, athletics, and character, it seems to be a really great prize, and it was a great prize. And then in my senior year, I received the Schwetz Prize, which was for friendliness and cooperation, and frankly, I was not too excited about that prize. For years and years and years, it was it was there and appreciated, but not really proud of it very much. And then one day, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I was explaining to someone the development at Andover in detail. I'm gonna put in my webpage the article of the Andover experience, so you can access it. But what I was explaining the Andover experience, from really not getting into to getting these two prizes and getting into Harvard and all, but it dawned on me as I was talking to her that this prize in the senior year was far better than the prize in the sophomore. The recognition for friendliness and cooperation, now that I'm 81, and this is about 2 years ago, is really, when I look back on my life and look forward, I think are values that are far more important than the others, of being a good athlete or having good grades or character, which means you're responsible or responding to this and that, and leadership. Well, those are important, but if friendliness and cooperation or collaboration are far more important. So anyway, that's my take on the importance of in terms of humility and all. So let's go into the good life. This is the longest study. It was started with students in 1934, and it was composed. In page 11, you're gonna have to bear with me as I may be a little bit too scholarly, but I want to be accurate with respect to this book, and it was a study that started in with 268 sophomores at Harvard College, and they were selected because they were deemed likely to grow into healthy and well-adjusted men. And in the spirit of the time, it was, basically people, and still psychologists, now kind of changed. I thought it was more recent toward positive psychology, but this study, went into studying healthy people and how they which ones continued to thrive and flourish and be happy and have a sense of well-being, and which did not. And at the same time, these 268 sophomores, they also put in the group 456 inner city Boston boys, and again, they were from troubled and disadvantaged families. But they had succeeded in avoiding the past of juvenile delinquency and that some of their peers following. So again, they were relatively healthy, you know, kids. These were all male. Later on, they brought in different generations of women, so that's the study, I think it was 1930 something that it started. So it's the longest, you know, longitudinal study, you know, undertaken to address, you know, what is happiness, and the criteria, you know, of you know, what's the good life, I think is really critical, because it's not you know, drinking and you know, it's page and dynamia. Let's see if I can get to you. It's the concept way back to Aristotle, and it's eudaimonia, eudaimonia, eudaimonia. And it refers to a state of deep well-being in which a person feels that their life has meaning and purpose. And it's contrasted with hedonia, the origin of hedonism, which is, you know, fleeting happiness of, you know, various pleasures. In lieu of happiness, more nuanced terms like well-being, wellness, thriving, flourishing have become common in the popular psychological literature. He says, you know, we use those terms in this book, and he says that his co-author Mark is particularly fond of the terms thriving and flourishing. But when they talk about the good life, when they talk about, you know, happiness, they're talking about this concept of Aristotle, you know, a state of deep well-being, life that you feel has meaning and purpose. You know, it doesn't really define happiness, but it defines, you know, what they consider the good life, you know, is. The main reason for the book is because from the very beginning that interpersonal relationships have proven over these many four generations to be the critical factor in those that thrived, who felt happy, who felt successful, who weren't depressed and anxious and, you know, so far anxiety, etc. It's clear but the whole book then is, how do you achieve good interpersonal relationships, in 1819 he goes in that this feeling of happiness and feeling of well-being is not something that you have at a given moment. It's a continuum thing filled with challenges and obstacles and all throughout your life. It's not something that you that's why the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, says that you're in the pursuit of happiness, and so it's always something you're fighting for and overcoming obstacles and all. So that's the concept of what the good life is, and what, in terms of this particular author's, and I think most of the psychologists now are you know, what's called, you know, the feeling of well-being, and some place, for example, Laurie Santos, the psychologist and professor at Yale, that I cite often with the great podcast, the Happiness Lab. Her course is the Psychology of the Good Life. So a lot of people use that term, but within the framework of what we're, you know, talking about now, going back to way back to Aristotle. I think the you know, the important thing of the of these relationships, he goes through, you know, the first ones is with a spouse, and how critical, you know, those are, and then goes to the family, the workplace, and all, and he has a graph which is really interesting, and it has you to. And this is something that's such a challenge in life. You know, who are good friends and all, and the definition of what's a good of what's a good friend. You know, the best one is really interesting. And I'm quoting: "It does not mean that the relationships are not not without conflict or bickering, or perfect, but that one can count on the other person in times of need." That's pretty profound. And as I, you know, started thinking back, people that you relate with, and I hope you do this with me right now, people that are important that you relate with, or at least, and you start weighing, you know, who are the ones that at the end of the day you can really count on when you really have any kind of a serious problem and a serious need, who can you call and know that they will come forward and help and do everything they can to help? And who, on the other hand, even though they're common, continuous relationships, you know, at the end of the day, you know you can't count on them. And in fact, a lot of them are just often asking for your help and your assistance, and you're happy to give it and happy to be the mentor and this and that. But at the end of the day, and you can go back and look at it with concrete examples. When I give a moment of real need, they will not necessarily step forward. So that definition of what's a good friend is really critical and pretty profound. But the graph, you know, on page 99 asks you to put in the on one hand is how are these relationships. You know, how often you're involved with them, you know. So on one line, there's infrequent to frequent. How often are these relationships, the communication and with these particular persons? And then that's horizontal. And then vertical, are these relationships energizing, or are they depleting? Do they improve you and make you better, or they make you worse and sadder, et cetera? And you know, for the one he has on the page 99, he has on the quadrant of energizing but infrequent has the mom. And then on the quadrant of energizing but frequent, he has the sister. Then in the quadrant of depleting, infrequent, he has the dad. And on the quadrant of depleting and frequent, these four quadrants, he has a coworker. And then he asks you to sort of, you know, which ones you think you can improve and move from one quadrant to the other. And also it's an exercise that's pretty profound if you do it. And then he asks you to, with respect to the relationships he has, you know, what kind of support, what value did each one of them bring to you? And there's safety and security, learning and growth, emotional closeness and confiding, identity, affirmation, and shared experiences, help, you know, both information and practical help, and just fun and relaxation. And so these different relationships, you know, what are the values, what are the support, that, and very few are going to give all of them. But there you start weighing the importance of different people that you relate to with respect to your well-being. So you know, that's would require a good exercise that would require, you know, some time to spend as you go through the different persons. And the other, there's a whole chapter on the importance of giving attention to the specific relationships as investment. And as we know, the time and priority are so critical. I go back way back into the 80s, where I did the analysis for myself and came up with that in terms of priority and the time, first is yourself. If you don't prove yourself financially and emotionally and intellectually and physically, you're not going to be able to help the others. And then there's the family and friends come second in priority and the importance of the time you want to give to them. And then there's your profession and your business. And then finally, your work for the community as a volunteer and all. And it was given when I was awarded the Chamber of Commerce, Puerto Rico Chamber of Commerce Citizen of the Year Award back in, I think it was 87. And I still like that article. In fact, I'm gonna put that also in the webpage, so you can read it. But the importance of the attention and the mindfulness and focusing on the particular relationships that are important is a whole chapter on how to achieve that, and what mindfulness is from their point of view, and the importance of not multitasking and focusing, etc. So. There's a Pope. I like this chapter on reflective versus reflection, and the program's called Reflections, and reflective he calls where you're just knee jerk and you don't, it's habits and all, and reflection is where you actually you do your analysis and you try to move forward and improve instead of going by habit and knee jerking. So I love that term reflexive with an XIVE versus reflective, which is reflections, which is what we're all about. And as we read this book, we try to reflect and see what we can do to improve ourselves. I'm run out of time on this thing. When we get back, there's in terms of the analysis of a situation and with the really focusing on the person. It uses this the term wiser, which we'll get back and I'll explain. I usually don't like these kinds of tools, but I'll give it to you and see if you like it. So we'll be right back after the pause. This is Jorge Gonzalez, Reflections, and I'm reflecting on the book, The Good Life, dealing with the Harvard study, going back to the 30s, and what is the good life, what is well-being and happiness.